The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Hello, this is Margaret Dixon on Paige Turner's at 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Radio. We are continuing to read The House on the Borderland by William Hope Hodgson. And things are continuing to get very, very strange here. So, let's see just how much weirder this can get. Every time I think it can't get any weirder, it seems to surprise me. The Awakening. I awoke with a start. For a moment, I wondered where I was. Then memory came to me. The room was still lit with that strange light, half sun, half moonlight. I felt refreshed, and the tired, weary ache had left me. I went slowly across to the window and looked out. Overhead, the river of flame drove up and down, north and south, in a dancing semicircle of fire. As a mighty sleigh in the loom of time, it seemed, in a sudden fancy of mine, to be beating home the picks of the years. For so vastly had the passage of time been accelerated, that there was no longer any sense of the sun passing from east to west. The only apparent movement was the north and south beat of the sun stream that had become so swift now as to be better described as a quiver. As I peered out, there came to me a sudden, inconsequent memory of that last journey among the outer worlds. I remembered the sudden vision that had come to me as I neared the solar system of the vast whirling planets about the sun, as though the governing quality of time had been held in abeyance and the machine of a universe allowed to run down an eternity in a few moments or hours. The memory passed, along with a but partially comprehended suggestion that I had been permitted a glimpse into further time spaces. I stared out again, seemingly at the quake of the sun stream. The speed seemed to increase even as I looked. Several lifetimes came and went as I watched. Suddenly, it struck me with a sort of grotesque seriousness that I was still alive. I thought of Pepper and wondered how it was that I had not followed his fate. He had reached the time of his dying and had passed, probably through sheer length of years. And here was I, alive, hundreds of thousands of centuries after my rightful period of years. For a time, I mused absently. Yesterday, I stopped suddenly. Yesterday? There was no yesterday. The yesterday of which I spoke had been swallowed up in the abyss of years, ages gone. I grew dazed with much thinking. Presently, I turned from the window and glanced around the room. It seemed different, strangely, utterly different. Then I knew what it was that made it appear so strange. It was bare. There was not a piece of furniture in the room, not even a solitary fitting of any sort. Gradually, my amazement went as I remembered that this was but the inevitable end of that process of decay, which I had witnessed commencing before my sleep. Thousands of years. Millions of years. Over the floor was spread a deep layer of dust that reached halfway up to the window seat. It had grown immeasurably whilst I slept, and represented the dust of untold ages. Undoubtedly, atoms of the old, decayed furniture helped to swell its bulk, and, somewhere among it all, moldered the long-ago dead Pepper. All at once it occurred to me that I had no recollection of wading knee-deep through all that dust after I awoke. True, an incredible age of years had passed since I approached the window, but that was evidently as nothing compared with the countless spaces of time that I conceived had vanished whilst I was sleeping. I remembered now that I had fallen asleep sitting in my old chair. Had it gone? I glanced towards where it had stood. Of course, there was no chair to be seen. I could not satisfy myself whether it had disappeared after my waking or before. If it had moldered under me, surely I should have been waked by the collapse. Then I remembered that the thick dust which covered the floor would have been sufficient to soften my fall, so that it was quite possible I'd slept upon the dust for a million years or more. As these thoughts wandered through my brain, I glanced again, casually, to where the chair had stood. Then, for the first time, I noticed that there were no marks in the dust of my footprints between it and the window. But then, ages of years had passed since I had awaked. Tens of thousands of years. My look rested thoughtfully again upon the place where once had stood my chair. Suddenly, I passed from abstraction to intentness, for there, in its standing place, I made out a long undulation, rounded off with the heavy dust. Yet it was not so much hidden but that I could tell what had caused it. I knew, and shivered at the knowledge, that it was a human body, ages dead, lying there beneath the place where I had slept. It was lying on its right side, its back turned towards me. I could make out and trace each curve and outline, softened and molded, as it were, in the black dust. In a vague sort of way, I tried to account for its presence there. Slowly, I began to grow bewildered as the thought came to me that it lay just about where I must have fallen when the chair collapsed. Gradually, an idea began to form itself within my brain. A thought that shook my spirit. It seemed hideous and insupportable, yet it grew upon me steadily until it became a conviction. The body under that coating, that shroud of dust, was neither more nor less than my own dead shell. I did not attempt to prove it. I knew it now and wondered I had not known it all along. I was a bodiless thing. A while I stood, trying to adjust my thoughts to this new problem. In time, how many thousands of years, I know not, I attained to some degree of quietude, sufficient to enable me to pay attention to what was transpiring around me. Now I saw the elongated mound had sunk, collapsed, level with the rest of the spreading dust, and fresh atoms, impalpable, had settled above that mixture of grave powder, which the eons had ground. A long while I stood, turned from the window. Gradually I grew more collected while the world slipped across the centuries into the future. Presently I began a survey of the room. Now I saw that time was beginning its destructive work, even on this strange old building. That it had stood through all the years was, it seemed to me, proof that it was something different from any other house. I do not think, somehow, that I had thought of its decaying. Though why, I could not have said. It was not until I had meditated upon the matter for some considerable time that I fully realized that the extraordinary space of time through which it had stood was sufficient to have utterly pulverized the very stones of which it was built, had they been taken from any earthly quarry. Yes, it was undoubtedly moldering now. All the plaster had gone from the walls, even as the woodwork of the room had gone many ages before. While I stood in contemplation, a piece of glass from one of the small diamond-shaped panes dropped with a dull tap amid the dust upon the sill behind me and crumbled into a little heap of powder. As I turned from contemplating it, I saw light between a couple of the stones that formed the outer wall. Evidently, the mortar was falling away. After a while, I turned once more to the window and peered out. I discovered now that the speed of time had become enormous. The lateral quiver of the sunstream had grown so swift as to cause the dancing semicircle of flame to merge into and disappear in a sheet of fire that covered half the southern sky from east to west. From the sky, I glanced down to the gardens. They were just a blur of a palish, dirty green. I had a feeling that they stood higher than in the old days, a feeling that they were nearer my window, as though they had risen bodily. Yet they were still a long way below me, for the rock over the mouth of the pit on which this house stands arches up to a great height. It was later that I noticed a change in the constant color of the gardens. The pale, dirty green was growing ever paler and paler towards white. At last, after a great space, they became grayish white and stayed thus for a very long time. Finally, however, the grayness began to fade, even as had the green, into a dead white. And this remained constant and unchanged. And by this I knew that, at last, snow lay upon all the northern world. And so, by millions of years, time winged onward through eternity to the end. The end of which, in the old earth days, I had thought remotely and in hazily speculative fashion. And now, it was approaching in a manner of which none had ever dreamed. I recollect that, about this time, I began to have a lively, though morbid, curiosity as to what would happen when the end came. But I seemed strangely without imaginings. All this while, the steady process of decay was continuing. The few remaining pieces of glass had long ago vanished, and every now and then a soft thud and a little cloud of rising dust would tell of some fragment of fallen mortar or stone. I looked up again to the fiery sheet that quaked in the heavens above me and far down into the southern sky. As I looked, the impression was borne in upon me that it had lost some of its first brilliancy, that it was duller, deeper hued. I glanced down once more to the blurred white of the worldscape. Sometimes my look returned to the burning sheet of dulling flame that was, and yet, hid the sun. At times I glanced behind me into the growing dusk of the great silent room, with its eon carpet of sleeping dust. So I watched through the fleeting ages, lost in soul-wearing thoughts and wonderings, and possessed with a new weariness. Pretty crazy stuff so far. Is our friend gonna see the apocalypse or not? We'll find out after a message from our sponsors.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield. 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at sundrini.com.
Still paying for that monthly gym membership? How about that streaming service you never watch? Why not support WTBR-FM instead? For just $8.97 a month, you can show your support for our community radio station today. Go to WTBRFM.com and click donate. It's as easy as that. We need to support this station to keep it on the air, and every little bit helps. WTBR-FM, for the love of radio.
Living Recovery is a peer recovery support center located in downtown Pittsfield. We welcome all who have struggled with addiction or those affected by another's addiction.
What have you learned while being involved at Living in Recovery?
I can own my own recovery path.
What has been your experience at Living in Recovery?
It's a family.
What keeps you coming back to Living in Recovery?
The live events.
For more information on Living in Recovery, visit our website, livingrecoverypittsfield.org, or phone us at 413-570-8243.
Let's have a party with all our friends. Let's have a good time. Don't let it end. We got the people.
Hey, friends. If you're looking for some party music, tune in to Polka Express with me, Bill Gustavus, every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10. Right here on 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
Where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom.
And we're back. For those just tuning in, this is Margaret Dixon on Page Turner's reading The House on the Borderland by William Hope Hodgson. The slowing rotation. It might have been a million years later that I perceived, beyond possibility of doubt, that the fiery sheet that lit the world was indeed darkening. Another vast space went by, and the whole enormous flame had sunk to a deep copper color. Gradually, it darkened from copper to copper red, and from this at times to a deep, heavy, purplish tint, with in it a strange loom of blood. Although the light was decreasing, I could perceive no diminishment in the apparent speed of the sun. It still spread itself in that dazzling veil of speed. The world, so much of it as I could see, had assumed a dreadful shade of gloom, as though, in very deed, the last day of the worlds approached. The sun was dying, of that there could be little doubt, and still the earth whirled onward through space and all the eons. At this time, I remember, an extraordinary sense of bewilderment took me. I found myself later wandering, mentally, amid an odd chaos of fragmentary modern theories and the old biblical story of the world's ending. Then, for the first time, there flashed across me the memory that the sun, with its systems of planets, was, and had been, traveling through space at an incredible speed. Abruptly, the question rose, where? For a very great time, I pondered this matter. But finally, with a certain sense of the futility of my puzzlings, I let my thoughts wander to other things. I grew to wondering how much longer the house would stand. Also, I queried to myself whether I should be doomed to stay, bodiless, upon the earth through the dark time that I knew was coming. From these thoughts, I fell again to speculations upon the possible direction of the sun's journey through space. And so another great while passed. Gradually, as time fled, I began to feel the chill of a great winter. Then I remembered that, with the sun dying, the cold must be necessarily, extraordinarily intense. Slowly, slowly, as the eons slipped into eternity, the earth sank into a heavier and redder gloom. The dull flame in the firmament took on a deeper tint, very somber and turbid. Then, at last, it was borne upon me that there was a change. The fiery, gloomy curtain of flame that hung quaking overhead and down away into the southern sky began to thin and contract, and, in it, as one sees the fast vibrations of a jarred harp string, I saw once more the sunstream quivering giddily north and south. Slowly, the likeness to a sheet of fire disappeared, and I saw plainly the slowing beat of the sunstream. Yet, even then, the speed of its swing was inconceivably swift. And all the time, the brightness of the fiery arc grew ever duller. Underneath, the world loomed dimly, an indistinct, ghostly region. Overhead, the river of flame swayed slower and even slower, until at last it swung to the north and south in great, ponderous beats that lasted through seconds. A long space went by, and now each sway of the great belt lasted nigh a minute, so that after a great while I ceased to distinguish it as a visible movement, and the streaming fire ran in a steady river of dull flame across the deadly-looking sky. An indefinite period passed, and it seemed that the arc of fire became less sharply defined. It appeared to me to grow more attenuated, and I thought blackish streaks showed occasionally. Presently, as I watched, the smooth onward flow ceased, and I was able to perceive that there came a momentary but regular darkening of the world. This grew until once more night descended in short but periodic intervals upon the wearying earth. Longer and longer became the nights, and the days equaled them, so that at last the day and the night grew to the duration of seconds in length, and the sun showed once more like an almost invisible coppery red-colored ball within the glowing mistiness of its flight. Corresponding to the dark lines, showing at times in its trail, there were now distinctly to be seen on the half-visible sun itself great dark belts. Year after year flashed into the past, and the days and nights spread into minutes. The sun had ceased to have the appearance of a tail, and now rose and set, a tremendous globe of a glowing copper-bronze hue, in parts ringed with blood-red bands, in others with the dusky ones that I have already mentioned. These circles, both red and black, were of varying thicknesses. For a time I was at a loss to account for their presence. Then it occurred to me that it was scarcely likely that the sun would cool evenly all over, and that these markings were due, probably, to differences in temperature of the various areas, the red representing those parts where the heat was still fervent, and the black those portions which were already comparatively cool. It struck me as a peculiar thing that the sun should cool in evenly defined rings, until I remembered that, possibly, they were but isolated patches, to which the enormous rotatory speed of the sun had imparted a belt-like appearance. The sun itself was very much greater than the sun I had known in the old world days, and from this I argued that it was considerably nearer. At nights the moon still showed, but small and remote, and the light she reflected was so dull and weak that she seemed little more than the small dim ghost of the olden moon that I had known. Gradually the days and nights lengthened out until they equaled a space somewhat less than one of the old earth hours, the sun rising and setting like a great ruddy bronze disk crossed with ink-black bars. About this time I found myself able once more to see the gardens with clearness, for the world had now grown very still and changeless. Yet I am not correct in saying gardens, for there were no gardens, nothing that I knew or recognized. In place thereof, I looked out upon a vast plain, stretching away into distance. A little to my left there was a low range of hills. Everywhere there was a uniform white covering of snow, in places rising into hummocks and ridges. It was only now that I recognized how really great had been the snowfall. In places it was vastly deep, as was witnessed by a great, upleaping, wave-shaped hill away to my right, though it is not impossible that this was due, in part, to some rise in the surface of the ground. Strangely enough, the range of low hills to my left, already mentioned, was not entirely covered with the universal snow. Instead, I could see their bare, dark sides showing in several places, and everywhere and always there reigned an incredible death silence and desolation, the immutable, awful quiet of a dying world. All this time, the days and nights were lengthening perceptibly. Already, each day occupied maybe some 2 hours from dawn to dusk. At night, I had been surprised to find that there were very few stars overhead, and these small, though of an extraordinary brightness, which I attributed to the peculiar but clear blackness of the nighttime. Away to the north I could discern a nebulous sort of mistiness, not unlike in appearance a small portion of the Milky Way. It might have been an extremely remote star cluster, or, the thought came to me suddenly, perhaps it was the sidereal universe that I had known, and now left far behind forever, a small, dimly glowing mist of stars, far in the depths of space. Still, the days and nights lengthened slowly. Each time the sun rose duller than it had set, and the dark belts increased in breadth. About this time there happened a fresh thing. The sun, earth, and sky were suddenly darkened, and apparently blotted out for a brief space. I had a sense, a certain awareness, I could learn little by sight, that the earth was enduring a very great fall of snow. Then, in an instant, the veil that had obscured everything vanished, and I looked out once more. A marvelous sight met my gaze. The hollow in which this house, with its garden, stands, was brimmed with snow. It lipped over the sill of my window. Everywhere it lay, a great level stretch of white which caught and reflected gloomily the somber coppery glows of the dying sun. The world had become a shadowless plain from horizon to horizon. I glanced up at the sun. It shone with an extraordinary, dull clearness. I saw it now as one who, until then, had seen it only through a partially obscuring medium. All about it, the sky had become black with a clear, deep blackness, frightful in its nearness, and its unmeasured deep and its utter unfriendliness. For a great time I looked into it, newly and shaken and fearful. It was so near. Had I been a child, I might have expressed some of my sensation and distress by saying that the sky had lost its roof. Later I turned and peered about me into the room. Everywhere it was covered with a thin shroud of the all-pervading white. I could see it but dimly by reason of the somber light that now lit the world. It appeared to cling to the ruined walls, and the thick, soft dust of the years that covered the floor knee-deep was nowhere visible. The snow must have blown in through the open framework of the windows. Yet in no place had it drifted, but lay everywhere about the great old room, smooth and level. Moreover, there had been no wind these many thousand years. But there was the snow, as I have told. And all the earth was silent, and there was a cold such as no living man can ever have known. The earth was now illuminated by day with a most doleful light beyond my power to describe. It seemed as though I looked at the great plain through the medium of a bronze-tinted sea. It was evident that the earth's rotatory movement was departing steadily. The end came all at once. The night had been the longest yet, and when the dying sun showed at last above the world's edge, I had grown so wearied of the dark that I greeted it as a friend. It rose steadily until about 20 degrees above the horizon. Then it stopped suddenly, and after a strange retrograde movement, hung motionless, a great shield in the sky. Only the circular rim of the sun showed bright. Only this and one thin streak of light near the equator. Gradually, even this thread of light died out, and now all that was left of our great and glorious sun was a vast dead disk rimmed with a thin circle of bronze-red light. It's pretty grim so far. And yet there's still more. What can happen after this? Well, we'll have to find out next week as we are running out of time. This is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners. As usual, I enjoyed reading to you, and I hope you enjoyed listening. We'll hear more of House on the Borderland next time.